Podcast. I am your co-host Corey Kennan, alongside my other co-host Dalton Miller. So far, our Thursdays, every other week or every 3 weeks or so, have been building our big board out. So we are currently through 10 picks. We're doing 5 picks every time we do a build a board episode. So we talk about 5 players. So today, that's what we're doing. We're talking about players 11 through 15 on our board. So we're talking about the next 5 players. We've got some pretty similar names, and we've got some mix-ups as well. So this is where it's going to start to differentiate a little bit. The top 10 players, we were almost lockstep, I would say. I had Shamar Stewart in there, and you did not. But other than that, I think we had the same 10 players, same other 9 players in our top 10. So, but we're going to start seeing some variety and some differentiation here. So this is going to be a lot of fun to get deeper into this board. But before we do that, Dalton, how are you feeling tonight?
I am feeling fantastic. You know, I just hopped off the tube. I was watching JMU in Western Kentucky. That was a nice little bowl game, the Boca Raton Bowl. Some good, fun college football that, you know, I don't normally just get to sit down and watch. And it's nice to just have a little bit of football on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Side note, though, because we didn't get to talk about this yesterday because of the breaking news with Michael Penix Jr. starting, is that it is absolutely ridiculous that the NFL scheduled games for Saturday. It's absolutely ridiculous that they are trying to steal viewership away from the college football playoff.
I don't think they will. I mean, they will obviously steal some viewership away, but they're gonna get lapped in terms of views.
It's kind of their own fault.
So It is pretty bizarre to see that. I mean, we usually have Saturday games down the stretch, but like we've never had Saturday playoff games. Obviously, the first year, the 12-man playoff. We'll see if they work on that in the future. We'll see. I doubt it, but we'll see. But yeah, we do have some playoff football. So again, tomorrow we will be talking about those matchups that are happening over the weekend, kind of what to watch for in those games. Again, we've got Ohio State, Tennessee tomorrow. I think are all 4 of the matchups tomorrow?
Yep, all 4 matchups. No. So Friday is.
Oh, we got some on Friday too. Friday, or not tomorrow. Friday and Saturday.
Yeah,
for some reason I keep thinking today is Friday, and it's not.
Yeah, no. Friday night is Notre Dame and Indiana.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then they gave Ohio State. In Tennessee, obviously, they deserve that 8 p.m.
It's really nice that there's only one game in each time slot. I really like mm-hmm. how they did that.
Yeah, I do too. That is really nice. Man, 10 days apart, though. That's a lot of time apart between the next round. Mm-hmm. Drawing the finals all the way out until the 10th. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's about it for college football playoff talk for now. Again, we'll talk some more tomorrow about that. But yeah, egregious the NFL is trying to overlap here. I know you got games to squeeze in, but figure it out some other way. You're doubling up Monday Night Football. Do some other Sunday Night Football stuff as well. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. But all right. So Dalton, as we've been doing this, we've started from the highest ranked and worked our way down the board. So we're going to start with 11 here. And based off of our conversation off air yesterday, when we kind of aligned these, we have the same player here.
Well, we do have the same player at 11, but I needed to quickly bring up my number 10, my new number 10.
Oh, right. You have a
because I top 10. I went back into the film and I watched more late season Isaiah Bond, more late season Luther Burden, more late season Tet. Came away feeling exactly the same way I felt about Tet the entire time. Felt a little bit different about Isaiah Bond, and maybe part of it was the ankle injury. Maybe part of it were some other things going on with him. And he has somewhat tumbled down my board. The talent is still there, but there are a lot more questions that I have with Isaiah Bond than I did before. But I went back and watched late season Luther Burden. I still have questions about him, but the talent the athleticism, the freedom of movement at 5'11", 208 is all there. And so for me, he actually ended up being my wide receiver one, and he is my 10th
Welcome ranked to the party. Player.
Yep, and he is my 10th ranked player.
Yeah.
I needed to bring that up before we got to our number 11, who, as you said, is the same player.
Yes. So, yeah, welcome to the Luther Burden wide receiver one party. Again, I just dropped a film.
I don't love it. I don't love any of it, but
I don't either. I went back because, I mean, I watched him, and he is my wide receiver one, still my 7th overall player, as we discussed. He is a little less explosive in his lower half than I remember, than on initial watch. I mean, he's still really explosive in his lower half, and he can still work through some arm tackles, but he's not as dense as I thought he was upon initial watch and upon a summer watch. But, I mean, it doesn't matter because he plays through contact better than any receiver in the class. Well, no, that's not true. Any of the top receivers in the class, I would say. Even a guy we're going to talk about today. But, yeah, I think he plays through contact really well at that size, so I don't have any concerns there. So, number 11 for both of us is, I have him graded as a guard, but it is LSU's Will Campbell. Do you have him graded as a guard or a tackle?
I have him graded as a tackle. Funny enough, I thought he would grade better as a guard, but he did not for me. Mm-hmm. He actually graded better as a tackle. And when I look at the pantheon of the NFL, if you can play tackle, you're going to play tackle. It is what it is. Like we said I said in a podcast or an interview this morning, we saw Jackson Carman start a game at offensive tackle this last week. So if you can play it, you can play it. It's a very much a Jonah Williams situation where probably a better fit on the interior, but he's athletic enough. He has enough length. He's never, in my opinion, going to be a Pro Bowl caliber offensive tackle, but I do think that he can be a positive plus left tackle at the NFL level.
Does seeing Jonah Williams not really put it all together at the NFL level give you a little more pause, though?
No, because I do think at the end of the day, we did get some good years from Jonah Williams. It never turned out to be what we thought it could be with him. And I do think that a lot of the times length isn't as important as we make it out to be.
Yeah.
But when you are losing because of your lack of anatomical length, ability to consistently win, then it becomes an issue.
Yeah. There's like conversation to be had about Bama offensive linemen coming to the NFL as well. Like how much of their body and soul is being grinded out of them at Alabama.
We've seen that with almost every single one of their lives.
Evan Neal, ever. Jedrick Wills, Jonah Williams, like Chance Warmack. It seems like all of these first round offensive linemen that are coming out of Bama either like just don't have the will to play football anymore, or like they just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe it's going to be like Saban's not there anymore, but like, yeah. I think there's probably a real conversation to be had about like how much did Saban ask of his trench players at the college level, offensive trench players at the college level. They've got a ton of dominant defensive linemen, but at the college level, by the time they get to the NFL, like these guys are spent.
How many of their linebackers over the years have we talked about being round one guys to end up going day three or undrafted? Because
Dylan Moses, man, the LeBron James just gave
up on them. Yeah. Their knees just gave up on him.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But yes, Will Campbell, number 11. I have him graded as guard. I agree with you that length is not the biggest concern when trying to project a guy to the NFL level. Because at the end of the day, Rashawn Slater had 33 flat arms, I think. And I was like, that guy's a tackle all day. Mm-hmm. That guy's a tackle all day. For me, what my projection comes down to, and this is how I feel about Calvin Banks too, is their ability to kick slide and their ability to move their feet. And to me, that's where I have some pause with Will Campbell as a tackle, because he does get beat for like off his half man outside shoulder often, like Kyle Kennard, R. Mason Thomas, Will or Nick Scorton. Like these guys got him because I just don't think he's sliding his feet fast enough, and I don't know if he can. And so, like, you and I are doing the same thing where we're, like, grading them both as a tackle or as a guard, and however they grade out higher is where we're going to stick them, even center as well. And so for me, like, I have the same five categories, interior and offensive tackle, that I grade them by, but the weights are different based off.
That's how I am too.
Yeah. And so athletic lower half ability carries a heavier weight for an offensive tackle than it does as a guard. So while I don't think that Will Campbell is anything much more than maybe a slightly above average athlete, like that's kind of how I see him on tape. I really just think he's a run of the mill athlete that matters less at guard. It just does. And so that's why I project him as guard, but that's not to say anything because he's still both of our top offensive linemen coming off the board in our big board exercise here, which also to all of you listening who like always, there's always that sect of NFL Twitter. It's like, your team needs to draft offensive linemen no matter what. It's like, well, we've talked about 11 players. We finally talked about the first offensive lineman. So that's just kind of class. Although I'm going to talk about three today, but it's just the kind of class that it is. It's like, we're not very top heavy at offensive linemen.
No, we aren't. I agree with you. I don't think that the explosiveness or even in some ways the agility ability to mirror foot efficiency is there, but I do. And again, this translates inside pretty well. The hip swivel, the ability to get on the move and going and just being free of movement. And I say that kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because of those issues. But I do think that the issues, and again, this is a projection into to guard at this point that I'm kind of talking about, but a lot of the struggles that I've seen are from wider techs and space and having to kind of think about where a guy is going to be and not just be able to react. And so for me, I was surprised that my grading scale had him higher at tackle. Mm-hmm. But because of that, I'm going to stick him at tackle, even though in my heart, Isaiah Bond is wide receiver one.
Yeah.
But that's not the way that I was able to grade him. And that's kind of the way that I feel about Will Campbell. The other thing that bothers me, especially with the move to the interior, is that stance is atrocious. One of the ugliest stances I've ever seen. There is no knee.
That's another thing. His knee bend is terrible.
And what are we going to do on the inside? Because it's the same thing with Emory Jones on the other side. He's very upright as well. He's not as upright as Will Campbell is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that knee bend is tough. And is he going to be able to play a little bit more square and much lower to the ground?
That's what I was going to say. His stance will be a little more square just naturally playing guard. Yeah. Than at, where he's not going to be kicked way back in his stance. Yeah. And I think that'll help a little bit. But I feel like we've talked a lot about like what Will Campbell can't do. And we haven't mentioned a whole lot about what he can do. So yeah. I feel like we should probably talk a little bit about that. For one, I think the dude is strong as an ox.
Yeah, dude is a finisher. Dude is, and yeah, the torque strength is there.
Oh my god! Finisher. Oh, he torqued Nick Scorton to hell in that Texas A&M game. Like torqued him to hell. My goodness. So he's strong as an ox. Grip strength. If he gets his mitts into the breastplate, good luck. Like just good luck. He's gonna.
And I think he's got a really nice anchor in pass protection as well. I don't think speed to power really bothers him. Yeah, even though he lacks length, you're not going through his chest. His issues are more with hands on the outside. Yeah.
So, and that's going to translate really well to guard. And he's not going to have to redirect for distance at guard. He will have to redirect. And NFL, this is worth mentioning, NFL caliber defensive tackles are super freaking athletic. Yeah. So redirectability is still going to be something to keep an eye on with him at guard. But again, the distance that he's going to have to redirect is going to be significantly cut down. So I think that plays as well. Who is your number 12 player?
My number 12 player is Arizona wide receiver Teteroa. I always screw up his first name. I look at it too, and I still always screw it up. Teteroa McMillan, 6'5", 210 pounds. Very, very smooth. Very smooth in everything that he does. Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast. He is not super explosive. He is not going to be a burner down the field. But he has a truly, truly outlandish catch radius. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And we saw somebody like Kyle Pitts, who was 6'5", 6'6", and had like 35-inch arms as well. But McMillan, everything he puts his hands on, he snatches. Very much reminds me of the old man at Penn State, tight end. Why can't I think of his name? He's with the Bengals now. He was with the Patriots.
Mike Gesicki.
Miami, Mike Gesicki. Built like a dad, or you thought he was, until he took his shirt off at the Senior Bowl and he was jacked. But it's what you get from coming from Penn State. But that ability to just make the ball disappear is what Tet McMillan does. Nifty feet. Obviously, that is size relative because he's not going to move the same way as Luther Burden or Isaiah Bond. It's just not anatomically possible. Mm-hmm. But what I do like is he does a very good job of stepping on defenders' toes. He does a good job of attacking blind spots. He is a very nuanced route runner and a very good route runner. And yeah, he has good ability to sink and get in and out of breaks. It's just not super explosive in any direction whatsoever. And so that bothers me because we have not seen many guys of his ilk have top 10 level success at the NFL. When we look at a guy and we look at what Tet might be, the very, very high end is Mike Evans. But yeah, Mike Evans has 20 pounds on him and plays stronger than him. And so you're looking at Drake London. And like, Drake London's an okay player, but you're taking that top 10, and that's tough. Like, in last year's class, he's wide receiver 6.
Probably.
Just the way it is. And it's the way that this class is. But if you have a quarterback who is not afraid to test tight windows, if the Cincinnati Bengals do not re-sign T. Higgins, like, that is
that's the player that comes to mind. Like, that's
who
his,
I think,
like,
he is.
Baseline.
But he's bigger. Yeah. He's bigger. He's taller. So yeah.
Yeah. But I do think he's probably similarly explosive as T. Higgins. He's such a unique player to where, like, nothing about his profile makes sense because dudes that big are usually explosive on the linear plane, but stiff in the hips. Mm-hmm. He is kind of opposite, where, like, he can make dudes – like, this season he forced 29 missed tackles, which is, like, over double than what he has done in his entire career this year. So, like, he's kind of gliding in the open field with the football in his hand. He's making guys miss. He's getting it out of breaks at 6'5", 212. But, again, I think what it comes down to, again, and it's a pet peeve of mine at the wide receiver's position, and that's caused me to miss on wide receivers in the past that I've talked about before, is, like, I've tended to overlook – play strength at the wide receiver position for twitch and ability to separate.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can he not really separate vertically, like, he had 31 contested catch situations this season, which is a fairly decent number. But for as big as he is, I would love for him to play bigger. And I think he has that natural catch radius, but through contact, I mean, until down the stretch where he went, what are we looking at? 9 of his last 10 in contested situations. He was well below 50% contested situations before those last three games of the season. And so I think we're going to see some, like, kind of streaky situations there as well. And contested catch guys give me pause to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think what we don't talk about a little bit is he's not strictly an X. I think he's going to play predominantly X. He's played 23% of his snaps in the slot throughout his career. Mm-hmm. So, like, teams can move him inside. I think Mike Gesicki's a good example there. Like, you can run that guy at the seam and try to create some matchup nightmares that way as well. So, like, you don't have to stick him on the boundary and just say, play jump ball basketball, like, along the boundary. Like, he can do a lot more than that. That overall top end explosiveness and the play strength is why Luther Burden is my wide receiver 1. I'm just going to go ahead and knock out my 12 and 13 here because Tet McMillan's my 13.
Can I just bring up the lackluster blocking is a bother for me as well with him because he doesn't
play big. Yeah, he just doesn't play big.
Yeah, that bothers me.
Yeah, yeah, especially for a guy who's 6'5", 212. Yeah, you got to play big. So, yeah, he's 13 on my board, but I'm going to go back and hit my 12 now. For me, number 12 is James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee. I know that he's tumbling down boards. Like, he was in summer scouting, he was not consensus, but, like, if you took a poll, probably 55-60% of people would have had him number 1 on their board coming into the season. Like, he was an overwhelming favorite as the top player in the draft class. He started his season slow, But man, the SEC games down the stretch that I watched, like this dude, he's the best pass rusher in the class. And no, Abdul Carter, scrap that. The second best. The second best pass rusher in the class. The dude's bend, his hands are ungodly active. Like that dude's hands are always working. He knows how to string together a counter. I think he replaces hands out of his frame pretty well, even though he's not the biggest dude. And he's ungodly explosive. First step is unbelievable off the line of scrimmage. His play strength, I would say, is above average, but it's not a blue chip trait of his. But that's not to say that I haven't seen him have some really impressive leverage just out reps setting the edge. I've seen him get into guys' chest with his he's got good length, and he's gotten into the chest of the guy and set a strong edge. So I think he can do that. You might have to start him as a DPR early in his career. Might have to. I think he can play rotational snaps. I think he can start and hold his own as a run defender. He's not going to routinely push pockets through the chest of offensive tackles, but the guy's so nuanced as a pass rusher, so explosive, so flexible. Like those are three blue chip traits right there, in my opinion. His hands, his explosiveness, his first step, and his bend. First step and explosiveness is one. That's at three, technically four, but first step explosiveness is one. And so for me, James Pierce Jr., you know, I've heard some things that he might be off of teams' boards. He might be falling down teams' boards. Tennessee might have, like, he was being rotated in near the end of the season because Tennessee kind of had an inkling he had one foot out the door, some stuff like that. That might cause him to drop a little bit, but like as a player, as a football player, as a pass rusher, dude, active.
Yeah. And getting to my 13th ranked player, it is James Pierce Jr. And I don't think there was a bigger surprise for me as I was grading guys, because when I sat and I watched the tape, I'm like, oh, I like him, but I don't love him. Mm-hmm. I don't love him because I want him to be more complete. I want him to be a little bit more consistent as a pass rusher and kind of convert on the flashes that I see a little bit more. But then when you put everything that he has and that he shows into a grading scale, this dude he's got it all. I mean, it is very much for me a Brian Burns type of player. It's, you know, Yannick Ngakoue. Is he ever going to be a plus run defender? Probably not. But who really gives a shit if he's giving you 12 to 15 sacks a season?
Right.
And that's the type of ability that he has. You talked about it, the effortless explosiveness. The first step when he was timing it against Alabama's right tackle had absolutely no chance. There was no chance that he was even touching him. He was turning the corner and he was in Jalen Milroe's face immediately. I think that he also can convert speed to power a little bit. And for a guy who's 240, 245 pounds, that's pretty impressive. He needs a little bit of a runway to be able to do it, but he is able to convert that. He has a plethora of pass rush moves. I hate that he wasn't really a starter at all for the entire year. I hate that he was rotated in and out so much throughout the entire year, but from pure ability perspective, people were right to have him high over the summer, and people are right to want to bet on those traits going to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. 14. Who you got?
14. Who I got? Another pass rusher, Shamar Stewart, Texas A&M, one of one body type. I mean, you've talked ad nauseum about him. We've talked ad nauseum about him. 6'4", 285 pounds.
6'6", 290.
So I have different measurables.
Oh, we got verifieds on him?
I don't know. I would have to actually, let me see.
Teams are exaggerating, but even 6'4 and a half and 285 is.
Yeah, so what that's a Miles build. Yeah, what I have for him. What I have for him is 6'4", 290. So 6'4", 290, which makes him just a little bit built lower to the ground than 6'5", and 5 pounds heavier than I had him listed at originally. I mean, this is a dude with ridiculous power output. The bend proactively, and this is where I get into proactive and reactive athleticism. He's 290 pounds. He's not going to be able to cut on a dime and delete angles like Mike Parsons can, but size relative, he's a freak, because you're talking about somebody who is legitimately the size of a lot of NFL three techs. So you're talking about a guy who can play on the outside. He very, very likely could end up being the 10.0 RAS guy for a defensive end. Unbelievable explosiveness. And when we talk about things like the three cone, things like the short shuttle, that is proactive athleticism, which he shows in spades. You've talked about the bend at that size. When he's able to be proactive, there was a I forget what game it was, but where there was a game between him and the defensive tackle. He comes to the inside and bends to the outside and almost takes down the quarterback. And I believe it was a
Missouri game.
Was it Missouri? Yes, because Cook kind of slid out left. He's a freak, man. I wish he had more pass rush. If he had a pass rush repertoire, this is a guy who is 101, and it's not even close. It's not even close. This is everything that we wanted Jadeveon Clowney to be. The thing is, with him, that's what we're looking at with this guy's floor, in my opinion, is a Jadeveon Clowney level player, where may not ever give you 10 plus sacks in a season, but he's going to be a plus run defender, just naturally going to be a plus run defender. He's got the length, he's got the power to be able to collapse pockets. So it might be a thing where he's got 45, 50, 60 pressures and six sacks in a season. He will affect the quarterback. He will terrify opposing quarterbacks, even if he doesn't finish consistently. I just wish that he had a little bit more. And I do wish another thing that kind of upset me is that I wish that he was better on the interior as a pass rusher as well, for his explosiveness. And it might just come down to the hands just legitimately are not there to be a plus interior pass rusher or exterior pass rusher for that matter. But if he can figure his hands out and get with a positional coach, you're talking about somebody who could be devastating on the interior with that burst.
Yeah. And he's got such a high floor because he's an unbelievable run defender.
Yes.
Like, he's going to play significant snaps as a rookie because there's no reason that you can't have him on the field. There's not a phase of the game he's a liability in as a rookie. And that's why he's my 10th player. And I do think the upside, I saw he flashes with his hands, but it's never consistent. Like, there's like, oh, he just hit a forklift, or, oh my God, like that's a devastating chop rip. And then like he'll go stretches and then you'll see it again. And it's like, where, why? So like, I hope he does find some consistency there. Easy player to love again. Why he was number 10 on my board in the last episode we did this. This is where we differ, because I'm going to close out here with two offensive linemen. 14 for me is Ohio State offensive tackle Josh Simmons. It really sucks that he got hurt as Ohio State was getting into the stretch of actual competitive play against, or he played about a half of Oregon. And then we didn't get to see him versus Abdul Carter. We didn't get to see him versus Michigan, you know, like it just, that really sucks that we don't have that. But man, and I know we're talking about Iowa and Michigan State. Like, I understand that's what we're talking about really as competitive games that he has in 2024. But in a class where nobody is a freaking tackle, or very few people are freaking tackles, man, like, he is one of the few guys that is asked to actually set at depth, to kick vertically frequently, to kick wide frequently. His feet are so twitched up, man. And last year, like coming into the summer, I didn't really like him because I thought his feet were like overactive. Like his feet were moving too fast. He wasn't in sync with the rest of his body. I think he really cleaned a lot of that up. His punch timing, I thought he cleaned up. He's a really good run defender because I think he has such excellent knee bend that he leverages almost every rep, man. Like, I feel like he leverages every rep and can get into chests of dudes across from him with pretty much ease. And I think that makes him a pretty improved run blocker as well. I think he still needs to clean up some hand technique. But, man, he's twitched up. He's so twitched up for an offensive tackle. He's got great length. I think he's got really solid upper body strength as well. Pretty dense arms. And so that's a guy that's like, if we're talking about needing a tackle, and again, it sucks because he had a knee injury halfway through the season, he's probably not going to test. He'll be ready for week one training camp, if I had to guess, maybe, depending on them. I mean, Ohio State has never disclosed what the injury was. But man, like, that's the guy that I'm of all the guys, because he doesn't bend at the waist. You won't catch him throwing early and getting out over himself. Like, his technique is more placement issues than anything else. And so that's so correctable. And so I'm taking a shot on those traits in a class where all of these offensive tackles are jump setting. They're all jump setting. He's setting at depth, and he's doing it almost every snap. So Josh Simmons is who my OT1 is. OL2, Will Campbell, OL1, but OT1, Josh Simmons, 14th on my board.
Number 15 for me. This might be a surprise for a lot of people, but it's Caleb Johnson, Iowa running
back. Ooh.
15. It's so difficult for me to explain his feat. It's legitimately art, and that's the only way I can really describe it. I've never really seen anything like it. Everything he does is like he's running the sled, but in real life, in game, the feet do exactly what they need to do to get him in the right place. And to do that at 6 foot, 220, 225 pounds is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. He, if you really want to like nitpick at his game, maybe he's not super explosive. He had the second most explosive runs in the nation this year, behind Ash and GMT. The dude makes big plays. That Iowa team was not, it's not Ohio State. It's not, I mean, they're always going to be able to run the ball, and their wide zone is fantastic. They coach it incredibly well. And I don't know if I've seen a outside zone runner better than him. I mean, he just, every single decision he makes is the one to make for that play. He maximizes yards, man. His eyes are fantastic. Short, choppy steps behind the line of scrimmage as he's pressing. His eyes are fantastic to manipulate the second level defenders, be able to jump cut and get, you know, width on those, to be able to cut back, to be able to make guys miss at the first level. He is so good at everything when it comes to being a runner. And the only reason I don't have him higher is because there is a lack of pass catching reps because he plays at Iowa. Mm-hmm. The hands look good when he is throwing the ball, but there's not a lot of creativity in his deployment as a pass catcher. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little while sometimes to see him really flourish as a pass protector as well. I think that when you look at the rest of this class, and it's kind of why Omarion Hampton and Nick Singleton are graded so closely to him, why Travion Henderson is so high on my damn board, because I value pass protecting at the position. Mm-hmm. And that's what those guys do better than Caleb Johnson. But I don't think, and this is to include Ashton Jainty. Jainty does things a little bit differently. Jainty breaks more tackles. JT has, I think, better long speed than Caleb Johnson does. He caught the most passes for the most yards of any running back in college football in 2023. And I think people are forgetting that about Ashton JT as well. But I think Johnson is the best pure runner in this class, and that class includes Ashton JT.
I was very close to talking about him this episode as well.
Yeah.
Very close to talking to him about him this episode as well. And honestly, he has a chance to jump a couple guys once we start getting athletic testing numbers as well on my board. I absolutely love that. I love it. I love it. I love it, because he's such a phenomenal football player. 15 for me is a guy we've talked a lot about on the podcast, and the steam around him has kind of cooled off from our perspective because the season's gone on. And while he was on a very linear growth, like every game is getting better, every game is getting better, every game is getting better, I think we did hit a plateau, which is fine because he's only 20. Just fine for now. He's only 21. And I think the raw tools are still there, and he is 6'5" and 335 pounds, and he moves really well at 6'5", 335. My number 15 for me is Texas offensive tackle Cameron Williams. Some things that I'm uneasy about with his profile is that I don't love how the weight sits on his feet. I don't love how his weight sits in his base. I do think he tends to get out over his waist a bit more than I'm comfortable with. If anything, I think his hands are a little late. And by the time he's engaging, dudes are already into his chest, into his outside shoulder. And so those are some things to clean up. But again, what I just mentioned are technique things. Balance issues scare me. I will say balance issues scare me. That's how I missed on a guy like Evan Neal. That's why I was lower on a guy like J.C. Latham, because balance issues do scare me, and I do see some balance issues. But I think he redirects unbelievably well at 335 pounds. Does he have the knee bend to match speed bend flawlessly, effortlessly? No, but again, he's 6'5" and 335 pounds. Like, that's what we were kind of talking about with Shamar Stewart. No, Shamar Stewart doesn't have phenomenal bend. He's 290 freaking pounds. This dude's 335 pounds. And Texas might be lying about his weight because he's a freaking big dude. He's a freaking big dude. So no, I don't expect him to have extraordinary knee bend, but how he does bend and how he does move at that side is except at that size is honestly like a 95th percentile athlete for a guy his size. Like, he's just a phenomenal athlete. Again, 1 year starter. We're talking about a 1 year starter. If we're talking about an upside shot, dude, Cameron Williams is the upside shot, maybe even over Josh Simmons. If we're talking about pure upside, and if you really are drafting in the top 10 and you don't love any player on the board and you say, I really want an offensive tackle that I can mold and that is young and athletic, that is has the highest ceiling in the class, it's Cameron Williams. It's Cameron Williams. And so, like, if some team took him top 10, I don't think I would be upset about it. He sits 15 on my board. Again, the balance issues do scare me a little bit, but the kind of athlete he is at that size and the evenness of his base foot-wise, not so much weight-wise over his waist, but I think he does have an even base otherwise. And then just, again, you're not working through his chest. He has such a natural anchor at 335 pounds. His punch, his ability to unbelievable, like to de-cleat and uproot defenders in the run game as well is unbelievably fun to watch. So Cameron Williams, number 15 on my board.
Yeah. Let me ask, how do you feel, or how did you feel about Amarius Mims compared to
I loved Amarius
Cameron
Mims.
Williams. So did I. I like well, Mims.
I do too. So let's have an honest conversation about the tackle class as well. Like, if we're talking about OT1, Josh Simmons, OT2, Cameron Williams, I saw a tweet from a pretty popular content creator that's like, oh, if Kelvin Banks was in last year's class, I think only Joe Alt would have gone before him. And boy, I could not disagree more with that.
No.
I think Kelvin Banks would have been OT6 at best last year. And neither of us have talked about Kelvin Banks, the first 15 players on our board, by the way.
Yes.
I think I would have. Amarius Mims, I had OT1 over Joe Alt, because I think the difference between Joe Alt and Amarius Mims is, the injury history is one thing with Mims, right? But I didn't consider that in my report. The dude is 6'8", 335 pounds. And I thought it was extremely hard to poke a hole in his game. Unbelievably fluid at that size. And I think what the difference between him and Joel, because Joel's also a really good athlete, really fluid, really technically sound, is that there's just something about guys who are doing that at their natural weight versus a guy like Joel, who's a converted tight end, who has to put weight on every year, who has to maintain that body. And doing it at that size, I think it was the main difference between Amarius Mims and Joel for me. Amarius Mims, I think, has the highest ceiling of any offensive tackle in the NFL right now. I mean, Trent Williams, sure, but he's almost 40, but his ceiling's been broken through a long time ago. So I think Amarius Mims has the highest ceiling of any young offensive tackle in the NFL.
Yeah. So for me, with Amarius Mims, I was shocked by how technically sound he was for being such an inexperienced player. The injuries obviously were tough. I think I had him as OT2. if I remember correctly. And Alt was not my OT1 either. Alt was OT3. Fashioning?
Fashioning one for you?
I can't remember offhand. Who are? Let's check that real quick. Let me look.
So we got Fuaga, Fashinu, Faltanu, Mims, Alt. All went first round.
No, I think Mims was one.
Mims was mine.
And I think Fashinu was two. And then
same with me.
And then Alt was three. And I liked Alt, but the difference between Alt for me was Notre Dame's run game got him on the move all of the time. Mm-hmm. And getting him a converted tight end on the move really got to showcase his athleticism and power in his lower half for everybody, the way he was able to displace people. And you're just not going to get a guy on the move that same way at the NFL level consistently. Now, Alt has ended up becoming
tremendous.
One of the best offensive tackles in the NFL already. And we're talking about, like you said, with all of these guys, add Fontenu in there. I mean, all of them were better than every single tackle in this class, period.
All of them know in the first time. Maybe Faltanu.
I loved him.
I did too, but his side, like, you know, like his
guard, you know, guard stuff. Yeah.
Fuaga, same thing, 31 inch arms, but.
I love Fuaga.
I do too. His split speed is tremendous at that size. Oh,
yes.
My God.
Yes. So, yeah, for me, that's kind of how I look at it. I looked at Mims as the better player from Cameron Williams, but comparable resumes overall. But that's it. That's 1 through 15. We got into this. We were like, oh, yeah, we know these guys. It's going to be a quick episode, and we know them so well that we couldn't stop talking
so much about them. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, again, do we want to go through our top 15 as it stands to wrap this episode up here?
Sure. Let's get it.
All right. Mine is Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Ashton Janti, Mason Graham, Will Johnson Jr., Malachi Starks, Luther Burden III, Mick Emmonwori, safety out of South Carolina, Tyler Warren, Penn State tight end at 9, Shamar Stewart at 10, and then from today's episode, Will Campbell 11, James Pierce Jr. 12, Teddero McMillan at 13, Josh Simmons, Ohio State offensive tackle 14, Cameron Williams, Texas offensive tackle 15.
Travis Hunter is number 1, number 2 is Abdul Carter, number 3 is Mason Graham, number 4 is Will Johnson, number 5 is Ashton Janti, number 6 is Tyler Warren, number 7 is Nick Emmonwori. We have another Nick and number 8, Nick Scorton. Number 9, Malachi Starks. Number 10, Luther Burden. Number 11, Will Campbell. Number 12, Teteroa McMillan. I'm going to screw that up every single time. Teteroa McMillan. James Pierce Jr. at number 14. And number 15 is Shamar Stewart.
Love it.
Oh, no. That's all wrong. 12 is McMillan. 13 is Pierce. 14 is Stewart, and Caleb Johnson is number 15.
Yeah, there we go.
We started talking about offensive tackles, and I forgot that I talked about Caleb Johnson on this episode.
Yeah, phenomenal football player. Should go first round, honestly. But yeah, that's it. We've got 1 through 15 down now. So, again, tomorrow we'll be back discussing some college football playoff, NFL draft prospects, NFL draft matchups to watch, guys with the most money on the line, things you should keep an eye on. Again, you've only got one game at a time this weekend. You got all the time in the world to just watch the players we talk about. So, until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft podcast.